Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
This is KJ and Lyons. KJ Carson and John Lyons right now on WEEI.
Final hour of a special edition of KJ and Lyons on WEEI, 617-779-7937. Text line 37937. We're about 10 minutes away from discussing the Bruins getting that game back into Toronto tonight. Tough win. We'll hear the final call, plus what moves forward next. So I probably have to share this with you, John. Usually about a year ago, maybe it's been 2 years. I don't know when they stopped doing late night. I would be on during this time, and my producer at the time was Justin Turpin. So this is when Justin first started here and so forth, and got to personally know the guy and know that he likes to go boating and stuff like that. I just stay away from Chappaquiddick. That's all I would say. But just absolutely proud of him now as a beat writer for WEEI, covering the Celtics and doing it very well. Can we give an applause for our own Justin Turpin live from TD Garden?
Thank you, KJ. Thank you. It feels like KJ, when we were doing those shows so long ago, I miss them. They were so much fun.
Yeah, they were. And so it wasn't fun tonight at TD Garden. Can you give us the vibe of the energy when Miami scores their 100th point? Like, what is the energy in the Garden at that point?
Honestly, it's funny. This crowd, this Garden crowd just swings, like, with every possession, right? Like, when things are going well, they're so lively. And then when they go down two or three possessions, it's like you can hear a pin drop. Like, The way it was, like, the crowd was all right tonight, but once they scored, like, they hit the corner three in the fourth quarter, right around, like you said, that 100 point, like, that's when they kind of really, the wind got sucked out of here and everyone started heading. But, like, you know, it's just crazy how they sway there and back. Like, I think that's something they can't control. Obviously, you can't control how the team's playing, but I think you can bring the energy regardless. And I don't think that was necessarily the case tonight.
Justin, the Heat came out and hit eight threes in the first quarter. It seemed like a clear plan from them to just shoot threes. And, of course, they had a historic shooting night on top of it. But what did you make of the Celtics' defense? I thought it was slow to adjust. I thought it was slow playing. What did you make of the Celtics' approach once Miami came out and just started hitting threes?
Yeah, it's funny because Eric Spoelstra talked about it, that they were going to have to shoot more threes. And that was a clear emphasis for Miami going into this one. And yeah, like you said, like, they were kind of lazy getting out there to contest. They really do a good job protecting the perimeter. And I think the Tyler Hero, Bam Adebayo pick and roll had something to do with that, because that's so dangerous in itself. And you saw both of those guys had a really good night tonight. But it was kind of funny. Like, they knew that this was going to be a point of emphasis, and they knew the game was going to be decided on the perimeter, as has most Celtics games this season. And, yeah, they, like you said, they were just kind of slow to get out there. And I didn't think they necessarily adjusted in the second half. Like you said, they made eight in the first quarter, and they didn't do much to switch it up after that. And I think that was mainly in part because of that Bam Adebayo and Tyler Hero pick and roll.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. We heard from Joe Mazzulla earlier, and he was talking about not getting through the screens. And then after that, I wondered, why did they not switch to a zone? Why did they not force those guys to try and take contested outside shots with the paint not being available to drive to or have that worry about it? Did it feel like that the Celtics felt they had the game in hand once they'd gone to halftime, and then by the time they came to the third quarter, it was just kind of like they felt like they were gonna just keep up by three and just add on to it?
I don't think it's necessarily that. I mean, sometimes teams just have hot shooting nights, and I think that's what tonight was. Like, it was a historic shooting night for Miami, and sometimes that's reflective. And I think, you know, their defense doesn't get out of jail free card here, but I think that part of it is just Miami shot the lights out. And when you look at this, like, they're not going to shoot 53% throughout a series. It's just not going to happen. And honestly, sitting there at halftime, when they went into the halftime, I believe they were, 13-24, shooting about 55%. Like, kind of sitting there, it's like, all right, basketball math, like, this is going to come down to earth. There's no way this is sustainable. And turns out it was. And that's just not sustainable through a series, though. So it was the right game plan for today. And, you know, that's really where the game was decided. And it was kind of obvious from the first quarter that three-pointers were going to dictate this game. And turns out that's what happened.
Justin, Kristaps Porzingis had his worst game as a Celtic tonight. He was 1-for-9 from the floor. Why do you think that was? Was it a him thing? Was it a Heat defense thing? Why do you think he had such a poor night?
You know, it's funny. I thought he did a good job with the physicality with Bam in game one, but I don't think I can say the same tonight. And Bam was great tonight. I mean, he was unstoppable near the restricted area. Even with Al Horford in the beginning of the fourth quarter, he was 4-for-5 in the fourth quarter, and I think all five of those shots were contested, and there was just nothing the Celtics could have done. But Kristaps really struggled against him tonight. We saw Joe Mazzulla kind of got away from him a little bit tonight, only played 30 minutes, which is slightly below what he's usually at. And, yeah, he was just struggling. I think it comes back to the physicality, where I don't think he was able to meet Bam there, and I think he was getting a little confused in the defensive coverage, just something we haven't really seen from him. And then on the offensive end, I think they were just trying to force it to him too much, where that's been a safety valve all year for the Celtics, and they kept trying too hard to get it to him when there's other options on this team. Like, when you look at it, outside of Tatum and Brown tonight, really nobody helped out except for that little six-point stretch from Derek White in the fourth quarter. I mean, not a great shooting night for really anybody outside the Jays, and I think they kept trying to force it to Kristaps Porzingis, try to get him going. And it just wasn't his night.
The importance of Peyton Pritchard has been discussed throughout the regular season. Did he seem timid tonight? He seemed like he was just not in the flow of things. And are you concerned moving forward that Peyton Pritchard just isn't clicking when he's needed the most?
I'm not, because I think the bench has been a strength all year. And I think they were great in game one as well. I think they were actually one of the strong points of game one.
So well, Hauser was. I'm talking about Pritchard.
Hauser was. I thought Pritchard was great too in the first game, but today it was more like the offense itself was they didn't play themselves offensively, and that's a lot because of their defense. When you're not getting stops, it kind of forces them to slow down, and the Celtics play their best when they're playing fast and playing in transition, and you can't do that when you're not getting stops. So I think the biggest thing, and I think he was a big part of that, where he likes to work as a facilitator, he likes to be a playmaker. It's tough to do when the offense is so congested and you're taking a lot of first shots, and I think that's what it was. And I think Pritchard will be fine. It's just a matter of, like, he's so dictated by his offense and his rebounding. And you look at it, he only had one rebound tonight, none of them offensively. But I think once the offense is really more smoothly operating, Pritchard will look better because he's just more of a playmaker.
And speaking of those playmakers, Derek White tonight, you mentioned the six-point stretch he had. He had 13 points overall, 4 assists. What did you make of his night tonight?
Yeah, it was really a weird night for Derek as well. The point guards, that outside of that 6-point stretch, like I said, like, he didn't really have much to contribute, and really no one did outside of the Jays. The defense was just weird because there was a lot of switching, and they were living with the threes. It was a strange night in that sense. But for Derek, I mean, he's kind of had these slip-ups recently, and it is a little bit worrying moving forward. But you saw, I thought he was going to turn the tide there in the fourth quarter, just couldn't get enough of it. So it was an interesting game for Derek as well, but I think he'll bounce back.
All right, Justin, before we let you go, do you think the series goes 5 or 6, 7?
It definitely doesn't go 7. I don't see a way it goes 7. I think the problem is this wakes up everybody, right? I think a lot of people got complacent after that first game, where it's kind of like, all right, the Celtics are going to run away with this series.
They'll win it in three.
Right. People were joking, like, they'll win it in three. And I think, but that's the thing with the NBA playoffs, is it's never going to be easy. And I think that's tonight serves as a lesson to the fans as well as to the Celtics themselves, where things aren't going to be easy in the postseason. And it's simple as that. So I do think it goes 5 games still. I just think, like, they're not going to shoot the way they did tonight. Like, I just don't think that's going to happen again. So I pick 5 games.
All right, Justin Turpin, thanks for the great work you do at WEEI. I'm proud of you. I know your family is as well. And tell the family I said hello. We haven't talked in a minute. Justin Turpin from TD Garden, man. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. Talk to you soon.
All right. Yeah, I'm with him. I don't think any of us think it goes 7. 6 would be a problem, don't you think?
Yeah, and that's the thing. And now you put yourself in a position where you have to win 2 in Miami just to be able to win the series in 5. So, yeah, I think 6 would be frustrating. Because, again, the thing about 6 games, okay, yeah, you can win the series in 6 games, I know. But then that's another game on the legs of Al Horford. It's another potential game where somebody could get injured. It's right. Another game where some flaw that you have could be exposed. It's another game where maybe, if the Bucks win their series in 5, it's another day for them to rest and for Giannis to become closer to being fully available. Like, that's the thing. Like, Tatum talked about this earlier this year. That's what hurt them with Atlanta last year. They win six games with Atlanta when they should have gone 4 or 5. Then they come out flat in game one against Philly. They end up losing a game four against Philly where they don't play well in overtime. So they have to go 7 against Philly. By the time they get to Miami, they're starting to run out of gas. And then Miami goes up on great shooting nights, 3-0. And yeah, they come back from it. But by it all kind of accumulated, boom, Tatum gets hurt in game 7 against Miami. They never recover.
KJ and Lyons, WEEI, 617-779-7937. Text line 37937. All right, next we'll get to the Bruins and their night tonight. But right now it's time to trend with John.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Lions.
KJ and Lions on WEEI.
Hard-fought win. A great playoff game. The Bruins win it 4-2 to take a 2-1 series lead.
Outstanding performance by Boston tonight, Jack. You know, at times you felt like they were up against it. I know I complained about the officiating. I thought it was tilted in one direction based on what I was watching in terms of what thresholds were for penalties. That being said, the Bruins played through it. They stuck with it. They stuck with the game plan. They stuck with the effort. They didn't get bothered. They got spectacular goaltending again from Jeremy Swayman. And then the leadership of Brad Marchand was just palpable at ice level. I mean, you talk about a will to win, a will to compete, a will to prepare to compete. And you get rewarded like that in a pivotal game three. That's impressive.
KJ and Lyons on WEEI, thank you so much for spending your time with us. Post-game Celtics 2, Bruins game 3, and of course you heard the call, Jack Edwards, turning it around against Toronto. And it's interesting, John, we've been talking about how the Celtics crowd was kind of like passive at times. It was really enjoyable to see Toronto just get really quiet as the Bruins started to creep and then take over the game.
Yeah, it was. And this was a game that I think really important for the Bruins to win. And I talked about this Monday night on the post game that, yeah, it would be great if they won 2 in Toronto and came back, you know, home up 3-1, but you needed to at least split. And coming off how disappointing game 2 was for them, especially that late second period stretch and then the goal they gave up in the third period to Matthews to ultimately be the game winner, for them to bounce back and win this game. And by the way, bounce back when Toronto ties this game with 8:35 left at 2-2. Game could have turned there and Boston could have ended up losing. That's how it turned in game 2. And instead, the Bruins answer right back. Marchand, they go up 3-2. It's just an awesome, awesome night.
Yeah, and then the empty netter to put the icing on the cake. Swayman was awesome. Jake DeBrusk has really kind of been the story, I think, so far for the Bruins, if he's the top guy so far. And even if you go back to Ullmark for game 4, I'm okay with that because it was the offense that was asleep in game 2 for the Bruins and not the goaltending. Let's go to Sean. Sean, thanks for calling WEEI. You're on the air.
Hello. Yeah, thanks for taking my call there, gentlemen. Well, I can say this. I'm real proud of what the Red Sox did tonight to win 8-0. The Bruins, like you definitely said, it was so wonderful that they were able to steal the home ice away from Toronto. But it does lead us to another team that has a little bit of trouble against the Heat, which is called the Celtics. It makes me so fed up with the Celtic team about why they could give up 23 three-pointers, okay, off the pick and roll. We could see that happening. But, you know, it's more to it than that, Celtics. Why do you always seem to have so much trouble winning playoff games at home? I mean, are you afraid to play at home, Celtics? Are you afraid to play the Miami Heat in the playoffs? There is no excuse, gentlemen, for this team to play like that. I mean, you're talking about maybe the crowd kind of like having a lack of interest or something like that, which is not, you know, surprising whatsoever. But I'm tired of it, Celtics. Why don't you stop losing at home and get your act together and start winning playoff games at home? I mean, this is not cool to be playing so bad at home over the last couple of years. I don't get it. I mean, what do you guys think?
Sean, thanks for the call. I thought we were going to, like, really give the flowers to the Bruins. But, yeah, you know,
But I think his TD Garden
point. Oh, we got to talk about the positive stuff.
I know. And his TD Garden points, and he called in Monday, yeah. And we talked about this as well with the Bruins. Both teams, significant issues over the last 5 years, over the last 10 years, winning home playoff games. Like, you look at when the Celtics have been eliminated, they lost multiple home games to the Heat last year. They lost multiple home games to Golden State the year before. You look at the Bruins, they lost 3 home games to the Blues in 2019. Right? Last year, they lost 3 home games to the Panthers. Like, it's something that it's just this home issue with both teams. It makes me want to, like, go out to TD Garden and instead of them doing renovations, just tear the building down and build a new one, because it's just both of these. And I don't know if it's a nervous energy with the crowd or they get too hyped up or what it is, but it again, when the Celtics and Bruins lose playoff series, one thing they both have in common is they lose multiple home playoff games. It's happened time and time. Look at the Bruins since they won the cup in 2011. Bunch of series they've lost either multiple home playoff games or at least one key game 5 or game 7 type home playoff game. And the Celtics, same deal. Look at them over the last 5 years or so. I mean, even go back to 2019, Kyrie's last year here. I think they lost multiple home playoff games against the Bucks to close out that series. I mean, they lost, if you want to call them home games in the bubble, which I know doesn't count, but like they just lose home game after home game in some of these key series.
That's the start of the whole Heat stuff, right?
But I also think, like, to get back to the Bruins, that was a good thing tonight, right? So they lose the home game. They're able to bounce back and play really well, including when it got tied 1-1, then when it got tied 2-2, they were able to bounce right back both times and pull ahead.
Well, I think the important thing about winning tonight's game, obviously, is taking control back of the series, but not allowing the same conversation of rotating the goalie now becoming bigger than what the team had to do. Right?
Did you see what Swayman said after the game?
No, I'm here at work.
So I didn't know if you read it, you know, on Twitter. No. He said he wants to keep playing.
Well, yeah, because he's got a contract coming up. Yeah. But I think we're at the point now where if it works, roll with it. What's working right now, look, Swayman is hot, and you can tell the team does feed off of his energy a little bit more, but I think the team still has to answer if they can do the same thing for Omar in game 4, right? So that's the other part, because what happened in game 1 now was just absolutely electric. The Garden's electric. Swayman is lights out. Omar in game 2 he's not as big. He's not as good as Swayman, but he's just as competent. What he did wasn't his fault they lost. The offense was kind of asleep. Some of the same names start to pop up again. DeBrusk pops up again. They make a couple of line adjustments. They put a JVR in there. So the little
Swayman
tweaks,
made a couple huge saves tonight.
Oh,
both
my gosh.
On the
first power play was absolutely amazing. And I think that set the tone. There was just some great defensive play in front of Swayman by the defense tonight, and the offense. While I thought they were a bit slow, they were moving a bit slow early on in terms of the aggressiveness. It picked up as the game picked up, so they matched that energy for energy. But they were a little low energy to start the game.
It did feel like, though, they played better 5-on-5 than definitely in game 2 and maybe even game 1. Because game 1, remember, they had those power play goals. They were bad 5-on-5, but it felt like tonight they were really good 5-on-5, and I thought that was huge. And like you mentioned, that early power play from Swayman, like that save he had on Matthews in the slot in that second period power play. I think that was when Pastrnak was in the box. I mean, that's a 69 goal scorer in the slot alone. Swayman makes the save, and then the other one he had, I think it was later in it was like 15 or so minutes left to go in the third period. He made another great save while on the penalty kill. I mean, that was, you mentioned, like, they did have good defense in front of him, but he really stood up when there needed to be key saves, and he made them.
So, and I almost feels like last year, right? Like, where you're like, okay, do you feel like they've got control of this series again? But what happened at home last year is still really going to be the final answer with this team. Like, okay, they can go on the road and get this done at Toronto, but Lord forbid they come back home and have what happened with Florida last year.
Yeah, and I said this after game 2 the other night. The most important game in this series that I'm looking at right now is game 5. 'Cause, and at that point, I was assuming they could split one of the two in Toronto. And right now, of course, they've already won one. Hopefully they can win the next one.
You would want them to win two.
Right. But if you come home up 3-1, close out the series at home in game five, which, by the way, if they keep with the goalie rotation, would be another Swayman game. But if they split here, well, you don't want to go back to Toronto down 3-2. Because, look, I think the Bruins are a better team than Toronto, but I know people are just used to the Bruins beating Toronto, the Bruins beating Toronto. And I get it, and Toronto has that loser DNA in them, I know. But the Bruins had 47 wins this year. Toronto had 46. Like, these are evenly matched teams. I know the Bruins outplayed them in the regular season head-to-head, but they're relatively evenly matched teams. I think the Bruins are only a little bit better. And at some point, KJ, Toronto's going to break through and win one of these playoff series.
So they haven't won anything since 55.
So you really don't want to go back to Toronto down 3-2. So you at a minimum, you have a split. Obviously, hopefully, you know, you win game four. But game five is going to be pivotal to me. And that's, I'm assuming they go with Ullmark in game four. But I think after after game four, and Montgomery kind of alluded to this before the series, that the goalie rotation would be there for the first four games. So he gives himself a little leeway that after game four, he could just stick with Swayman for games five. And if there is a game six going forward, if he thinks Swayman's playing better, because I thought Ullmark played well in game two.
Right.
But I do think Swayman's been a little bit better in his two games as opposed to Ullmark the other night.
So this is why I say that the Bruins have to win game four as well. They got to win the two, because then if you still want to go with your rotations, things would have evened themselves out. If they lose game four, then it probably means that Ullmark has lost your two games. So as you mentioned, if you continue to go with Swayman, is this now for the rest of the playoffs or just the rest of this series? And these are things that's like, if there's one less thing you have to think about, you can solve that in game four by winning with Ullmark in net. So that's why, obviously, I think we all here want to see them win another one in Toronto and just absolutely add to the years of tears. Though, you know, I do have a personal connection to the Maple Leafs, right?
Go on.
So a girl named Tracy Wilson I used to work with, her brother is Ron Wilson, the former head coach. And I met Ron Wilson years ago when I was a youngster.
Okay. Okay.
They're a little small flex.
Did you teach him how to
brother,
shoot like you
nah,
did Steph
by that
Curry?
Time, I think he was helping out with the Olympic team at that point. But that's another brother with an NHL flex like that. Come on, where else you hear?
That's pretty good.
That's the thing. It's like if there's one less thing that Jim Montgomery has to think about, because look, if Swayman is just leaking out like, hey, I want to keep going, and then let's say Ullmark loses game four, does the press now go back to Swayman and follow up on his thoughts?
Yeah, and the other thing is these extra days off, because one of the things about this goalie rotation, right, is it gives guys rest. So they have a couple days off until game four. They have Thursday and Friday off. But then I believe after that, it just starts going every other night.
Right.
So it's like, okay, if you go Ullmark game four, if you go Swayman game five, if you want to go back to him game six, it's just you still get a day off in between, but it's not the 2 or 3 days off that you would get if you were still doing the rotation. I mean, I'm not against it, but I think you're right. It would just make things a lot easier if you just win game four and you can go home game five, you know, up 3-1. And that's the other thing. Like, again, the Celtics and the Bruins, they have some of these threads in common. Trouble winning at home, trouble closing out series. Like, if you're the Bruins, your mentality should be, we want to win this in five games. We don't want to go to seven again against Toronto. Because, like I said, eventually Toronto is going to win. They're going to win one. Like, they have Austin Matthews, they have Mitch Marner, they have John Tavares. Eventually, one of these game sevens, and it might be this year, it might be in the year 2135, but one of these game sevens, they are going to beat the Bruins. So don't get there. And I think tonight was a great response. So continue that going forward. And I love the fact, another goal from Trent Frederick, his second career playoff goal, second one this series, and another big night, KJ, from Jake DeBrusk. I think he's been the best skater the Bruins have had this series.
It's just amazing thing. Just, a year and a half, 2 years ago, the guy's like, get me out of here.
Yeah, and then didn't he do it again, too? Like, he's requested, like, two trades or three trades in the last 5 years.
Maybe do it again. Like, do it again during the series if this is what it's going to take. You know, like, hey, we'll take it all from you. It's just interesting, and you know how fatalistic our fan base can be with its teams, that I think out of all the teams, the Bruins have the most fatalistic feeling by the fans because of what they've seen and because hockey's the one sport where you can clearly say that, you know, home ice doesn't necessarily mean anything. And so what would be more depressing? What happened last year against Florida at home? or if Toronto comes back and wins this series.
Oh, definitely last year.
I think it's Toronto winning this series.
No, I think it's last year. Last year, how do you not learn from last year? Yeah, but last year you had a team good enough to win the Cup, Bergeron and Krejci's last time on the team together. Like that, no matter what, like the only thing to me more disappointing than last year is like 2019 against the Blues, 2013 against the Blackhawks. Like that's, by the way, more home losses.
I thought last year was greater than the expectation. I thought last year was just the last ride, and it ended up being one of the best last rides we've ever seen. Until you got to the playoffs. Yeah,
but then they went all in at the trade deadline. Like, they were trying really hard to win a cup. And also, I will say, last year's Florida team, I feel like, was a better team than this year's Toronto team. Like,
they snuck up on people.
Yeah, I will say, I mean, hey, they went to the cup final, right?
Right.
They snuck into the playoffs, but, yeah, they ended up going to the cup
all
final.
The way. Right.
Yeah. So, and that's it. Like, when I look at this Toronto team, that's why I think, again, tonight was so important. Because if you had gone down 2-1 in this series, and that's a team at home with Matthews and Marner and Tavares, yeah, they have the losing DNA, but one of these times, they're going to break through. So you want to do, if you're the Bruins, keep that doubt in there. Like, I felt like in game one, once the Bruins got a few goals on the board, Toronto had doubt in their mind. And the Bruins were able to just kind of cruise the rest of game one. And then in game two, the Bruins never really got Toronto to doubt themselves in that game. Toronto ends up winning. I know the Bruins went up 2-1, but they didn't really build off that 2-1. Tonight, the Bruins were able to establish some doubt, and I think it was those quick responses, right? Like Toronto scores, not long later, Trent Frederick scores, then Jake DeBrus scores, then Toronto ties it, but then Marchand answers right back, boom, you're up 3-2. I think Toronto's a team, and especially when they're playing the Bruins, if the Bruins can implant a little bit of doubt there, it goes a long way against a team like Toronto.
See, I think with Toronto, it's the other way. I think they're the ones that are, it's too good to be true. If Toronto had gone up 2-1 in this series, I would say the Bruins would walk them down in 6, possibly even 7. I truly believe that because I think there would be such a sense of urgency. And because Toronto would be in this belief mode, right? And I think for them, it's almost like Santa always passes by their house on Christmas. It's just been going on for damn near 60 years, okay? But when they're in a situation where, okay, they've got to come from behind, damn, this team would be kind of right in the Bruins because of what happened last year to say, hey, don't count yourself out. These things could still happen. That's why the Bruins have to win game 4. Because if they win game 4, I think they kill any belief that Toronto has to believing that they can win 2 out of 3 games with 2 of them being on the road.
Yeah,
so I can't see that.
Yeah, and to your point, it feels like Game 4 is kind of one of those swing games. Like, Game 3 was really important for the Bruins to bounce back, but Game 4 is a swing game. Like, if the Bruins win Game 4, I think they win the series in 5. Whereas if the Bruins lose Game 4, then I think it probably goes 7. And even if it goes 6, it's one of those cases where, like, every game the rest of the way is really hard fought. So I think this Game 4 can be that swing game where they win Game 4, boom, they win Game 5, and it's over. But they lose game 4. Now, not only do I think it goes 7, but that just piece of, is Toronto finally going to win one of these, starts to creep in.
Nico, if you've got it, let's hear from Jim Montgomery post game, if you got it.
We don't have the full post game just yet. Well,
okay, not all of it yet. Okay, so because I'd love to hear his thoughts, and maybe we can get to that before we get to break.
He did mention, though, one quote I do have from Montgomery is he mentioned that, you know, Swayman's play in this game inspired the bench. And I think that's an interesting way to phrase it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that's something that if you're going to advance past this series and you got to pick who's going to be my guy to start game 1 of the round 2.
Right.
If one guy's inspiring the bench, that's probably the guy you're going to go with.
And I think that's where it goes to some people say, look, it's silly to even have this conversation about the rotation. But I mean, gosh, going back to when I was a kid, I mean, Dominic Hasek would just take over an entire series. And granted, the guy's like all-time Hall of Fame, but, you know, you might make the argument for Swayman and Omark at one point. It could be up for Hall of Fame nomination too. But the hot goalie is just so, so key in the playoffs. Nobody's become somebody's. Somebody's can become Hall of Famers. And do you think it's in the back of Swayman's mind that he's playing on the one-year deal and he wants to be able to prove his worth right here? And get himself maybe paid as a top 5 goalie with a full contract?
Well, not only is it a one-year deal, but remember they kind of busted his balls on arbitration like last summer? Yeah. And then on top of it, they tried to trade Ullmark at the trade deadline.
Right.
Like, so if I'm Swayman, I'm thinking, hey, this team wants me to be the goalie of the future. I can go out here and only prove that, but I can earn myself a lot of money if I go out and play well right now. Sure, I'm sure that's there. But
or I take myself to the free market because of what happened on the low ball situation last year.
But either way, arbitration. It's incentive for him to play really well. And again, I don't think that's the reason he's playing well, but it doesn't hurt, right? That motivation. We see it every single year, right?
How does football
Jake DeBrusk? I just mentioned Jake DeBrusk. He's going to be a free agent after the year. He's having an awesome playoff so far.
I think he wants to stay. I think with him, because it's been such a back and forth, like, you know, with Swayman at one point, it was kind of like, okay, look, clearly Omar's the guy, kind of watch. Then things took off for you. Oh, by the way, it's a contract year. So I think there's a part of Swayman that I can't say I'm in his head, but if I was in his head or if I was thinking this, I need to be able to show out there that I'm a top goalie. So that way, when negotiation comes with the Bruins or for other teams, I can show that I can get max value by being the dominant goalie in the playoffs off of my most recent work, right? Because one of the narratives could be like, well, look, you rotated with Ullmark for half, for almost half the year. So, like, why would we give you the maximum money you think you deserve?
Right.
Now, I don't think Ullmark's going to be staying. I think that's the other thing, you know? It's like you probably would have tried to get value for Ullmark without getting something. You don't want to not get something in return for him, especially someone who desperately would say, look, goaltender's all we need. But if Swayman goes and Ullmark is gone, like, that's a real possibility.
Yeah, another thing tonight, too, that I think the Bruins deserve credit for, 24 block shots. I think that with an offensive team as good as Toronto, I think to block that many shots, and that's something, too, like, that end of
they
period.
Had, like, eight of them after the first period. It was, like, 8-3.
Because it felt like, and it's funny, that first period was 0-0, but it felt like both teams were really on their game defensively. Like, both teams had some chances, but as you're watching that game, you're 20 minutes in, 30 minutes in, it ended up being a game that was 4-2, but it felt like both teams played pretty well defensively almost the entire game. And I think that 24 block shot number is big, because if you're the Bruins, you have a good goaltender. If you help him out by blocking 24 shots a game, I mean, it makes his life easier, but then it's really tough to beat the Bruins. Like, when they can get goalie play as good as they've got at this series, especially from Swayman, and they're blocking shots and they're scoring on the power. I mean, they had three power plays tonight and they scored on two of them. Like, when they're doing that, then it's extremely difficult for Toronto to beat that. And it felt like, and again, in games 1 and 3, the Bruins brought more intensity, pushed the pace, pushed things towards Toronto's end, and they were victorious. Whereas in game 2, it felt like Toronto pushed the pace more, and they ended up winning. It just made a huge difference tonight.
I mean, think about it. Pasta and Jake DeBrusk -2, and they win by 2. Like that. Yeah. So that tells you right there, like, and again, it's just other guys are showing up, and they're playing the hard defense, and like you mentioned with the blocks, that's only going to give more confidence to your goalie, because you're like, man, they are out there doing my job along with me versus, there's nothing worse than the juicy puck lying in front of the net. Even the first goal that Toronto scored, it was almost like, I can't even knock Swayman on giving up that goal because you were just stretched out. There's nothing you could really do there.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, Swayman in game 1, he had 35 saves on 36 shots. Like, tonight he had 28 saves on 30 shots. Like, he's playing really, really well right now. And I think defensively in front of him, like, they've been inconsistent. The first two games, I thought they were kind of inconsistent defensively, especially game 2. And, like, one of the goals tonight went off Lindholm's skate, the second Toronto goal. Like, what are you going to do about that? Like, I don't blame Swayman for that. I think defensively, the Bruins still could be a little bit better in this. I thought they were better tonight, but I think they could be a little bit tighter moving forward.
Better control in the neutral zone of the puck. It just seemed like it got away from a little bit too much. All right, let's hear from Jim Montgomery before we go to break. Here he is.
It was awesome to do it because, we got a series lead, but it's the way we did it. Like, morning skate, I saw the way we were. I saw the way our captain was. And I just knew we were going to have a good game. Didn't know we were going to win because Leafs are a good hockey team. But I knew we were coming to play.
In what way? What did you see from Brad in morning skate?
Well, he started barking the first drill before. I go, what's 3 minutes early? He goes, let's go. I loved it.
learned about your captain's ability to rise in the big moments since you took this job?
I guess now I witness it firsthand, but I love watching hockey, and even if I wasn't coaching the NHL, I was watching him and Bergeron and what the Bruins were doing, because they've always been an elite team, and he's always risen to big moments. So you look at his career points in the playoffs, like, wow.
Jim, there are guys that get in an emotional back and forth with somebody like that, and they lose something from their game. Is kind of Brad's hallmark that he's sharper, or he can stay sharp when things are getting a little bit chaotic around him?
I just think there's a burning intensity in him to win, and he doesn't care about what just happened. It goes good or bad, it's gone. He's on to what's next.
Yeah, Sheldon Keefe was just in here saying it's unbelievable how Brad is able to draw penalties, avoid getting calls himself. What allows him to stay on the right side of the line so much, even though he kind of lives in that gray area?
Well, it's new. I think it's age, right? But the 2 years last year, he did this. I don't think he took a penalty last year in the playoffs, you know? And obviously he's, you know, everybody in the playoffs targets the other team's best players, and he gets targeted, and he still manages to get under people's skin, and yet he doesn't cross the line. It's something that, you know, you just got to tip your hat to him because of his maturation as a hockey player and as a person.
Jim, too, if I could, the power play, as you know, over the last 12 games, regular season, is missing in action. What's been the reason for the turnaround here?
I just think the pace with which we're playing with, pucks are moving, people are moving off the puck. It's what we were trying to do for those 12 games. And I just think also splitting up the units, it created inner competition. It also freed people's minds of like, oh, I got to get the puck to Pastor. I got to get the puck to March. You know, it was the same old, now it was fresh.
And related to that, and late in the segue, the end of the second period, there's the delayed call, and you guys sort of bleed that out, right? Is that something you constantly reinforce, or you've got players who just understand how to do that and get the fresh ice for the next period?
Well, it's something that we talk about a lot. And we try, if Toronto didn't have a penalty, we really try and milk the clock to be able to create, because usually we have a delayed penalty. The other team's best defensive players aren't out there. They're not used to being out there. Not all the time, but, you know. So that's why, like, if you see a lot of teams, they do that. But for us, it was really smart. That's the players on their own doing that. And you could tell, like, Lindholm and Marshy brought it back. Like, it was just really smart with the time management on the clock and being able to get a longer power play.
It's not something you can be yelling from the bench.
No, I yell from the bench all the time. They never listen.
How often have you seen Swayman be in these two starts that he's gotten?
He's been terrific. Like, I just love his compete level and his quickness, right? Like, I mean, there's, when it went 3-2, right after that, there was a barrage of, like, rebounds. I think, if I'm remembering correctly, Bertuzzi had two of the chances. But there was two more, it seemed like. And he was just square to puck, and he's fighting, and he finds it. Like, it inspires the bench.
It inspires the bench. There it is, John. It inspires the bench. Jim Montgomery, very jovial in a post game right there. Very jovial. You have to feel really good if you're the Bruins right now.
Yes, a lot better than you would feel if you were wearing green at the TD.
There you go. KJ and Lyons, special edition wraps next here on WEEI. 617-779-7937. Your text messages, 37937.
This is KJ and Lyons on WEEI.
Yeah. Special edition of KJ and Lyons. Thank you so much for being here. It's been very eventful. If you missed any of it, the Odyssey app is free. Just download it at the Odyssey, like, hub, right? And just type in WEEI 93.7. Brings you right here. Click the little heart, and then it'll save your favorites. And you can play the show if you missed any of it, chapter by chapter. Before we get out of here, we got to talk about the Keefe party that happens here tomorrow night for the draft. Let's go to Daniel in Kansas. Daniel, thanks. You're on WEEI. Oh, we lost him. So sorry. A little bit of a wrench. One more text, Nico, about the Bruins or Celtics for tonight.
Sure thing. We got one text here that says Ullmark was the guy with a bunch of question marks and exclamation points. They do not agree that Ullmark was ever the guy, KJ.
Well, that's because he's an older guy. The question was Swayman ready to step into the point? I know what they're trying to get at. Brother, you're trying to talk about hockey. You don't know hockey.
Well, and I think, like last year,
Ullmark's what, 34?
Well, and he won the Vezina last year. Like he was the guy. But I think Swayman has shown this year. And I think the Bruins' willingness to trade Ullmark at the deadline shows this. They view Swayman as the guy. And I think he showed that this year. I think he's passed Ullmark. Look, they're both still great goalies. But I think Swayman this year passed him by. Last year, Ullmark was the better player. And I know it didn't end well. But this year, I think Swayman has finally passed him by.
John, can I do it? Can I do it?
Do what?
Tell me you don't watch hockey without telling me you don't watch hockey. That's what they just did.
Yeah.
Okay, so tomorrow night, Rich Keefe's got a draft party. It's going to be interesting because when the Patriots come to number three, John, are you sold that Drake May's the number three pick?
I am, and I think Caleb Williams goes one. I think Jaden Daniels goes two, and I think the Patriots go with Drake May at three.
I don't know if they're in love with Drake May, and I think if there's a trade, and I've never talked about trade, right, because I always get into John's like, I never do trades. I just take what's available right at that part. I wonder if the Patriots and the Giants, because keep in mind, they've had a relationship over the years, right, get on the phone and swap 3 and 6 and take Joe Alt and then get Michael Penix Jr. at 34 and then still get the Giants' second round pick at like 37.
I don't know if Penix will be there at 34.
I think he will. Oh. He might be. And the reason why I think he will be is because as you get later into the draft in the first round, who needs a quarterback? Those are all playoff teams.
Sure.
Or you might be one of these teams that were in a situation where you might have just had a decent year with a decent quarterback and don't jump all the way through. I think because if you get Joe Alt at 6 and then you don't have to pay him top 5 money, you can pay top 6. So you pay him 6 through 10 number. And then be able to start building your offensive line. Do you like my draft that I sent you today?
Yeah, I like it. I'd
and
like
they
it better.
And they
give
me all A's and A pluses.
I know. I'd like it better if they got Drake May at 3, though.
All right. At the real John Lyons, no H in Lyon and in John. At KJ Carson, at WEEI on Twitter. Have a wonderful evening. We'll talk to you again Sunday, 1 p.m. See ya.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.